Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hello, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, why are children not getting their vaccinations, especially in the middle of a measles outbreak? Are these parents nuts? House Democrats are talking about committee term limits and also eliminating seniority. Congressional Black Caucus saying, oh, y'all might want to back up. And is America more accepting of culture than race? Author Jeff Chang discusses his NAACP-nominated book, Who We Be. And also, if your exercise routine has gotten boring, the exciting new Shockwave workout will whip you into shape. That's what we talk about on Fit, Live, Win. Also, R&B artist Antoinette Smith talks about her Grammy nomination and the voting process. All that more coming up right now. We bring the funk on News One Now. Us remember growing up and we're getting our vaccinations, getting our shots for measles and other kinds of stuff along those lines. But these days, you have a lot of parents out there who are saying, oh, no, I don't want my kid to get vaccinated. But what's the problem? We're in the middle of a major measles outbreak. Hit 13 states across the country right now. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say there's a problem because parents are not getting their kids vaccinated. And so what's going on here? Pediatrician Dr. Marilyn McPherson Corder joins us via Skype from Washington, D.C. And Doc, I got this is crazy because I remember getting the shots and having to go down there and you're crying and you're yelling and all this sort of stuff along those lines and your mama calming you down, your daddy saying, shut up, stop crying. And kids are not getting vaccinated. And what's happening is other kids are being put at risk.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Roland. You know, I remember when I first started training, and that was in the 70s, and we saw measles, and there were at least 500,000 cases each year. And of that, 500 or so children died. So the vaccine came out, and we then saw a drastic decrease, significant, to just a few hundred. And we eliminated it. Measles was gone. But as you said, in the past few years, lots of folks, the anti-vaccine group, they're like not immunizing. And unfortunately, we have gone backwards. We are now seeing measles from 2011 to 2014. As if it were 15 years ago. And now today we have more than actually there's 20 states. They just had an update on Saturday that there were exposure to measles in two or three of the airports here in New York. So it's major. And I want to make sure that people understand why it's important to be vaccinated with the measles vaccine. This is a virus that can kill. This is a virus that is highly contagious. If you have measles and you walk into, let's say, a Starbucks, a doctor's office, a salon, 90% of the people there will be affected. Now, if they have immunizations or have had antibodies to the measles, then many of them will not be as ill and won't get it. But the contagiosum of measles is significant.
I got to ask you this here because I'm reading this story here in the Washington Post. Yes. Shelley, go to my iPad, please. And this is Chris Christie is breaking with the president where he said the government must balance public health interests with parental choice. You are a pediatrician. What do you say to these parents out here who are saying, oh, it's parental choice, I should get my kid vaccinated?
Well, you know, it is parental choice, and you can't take that away from them. But unfortunately, those that deny vaccinations, not just the measles, but other vaccinations, are putting their child and it's becoming a public health issue. So as much as I can educate Roland, there are times when they'll say no. And after I've spoken to them, shown them information, talked about the side effects, which are minimal compared to the side effects if you get the measles.
Yeah, like the side effect of death.
There you go. There you go. And brain damage and all of the above.
I want to go to our panel, George Jefferson Nuri in the Public Eye Communications, Cleo Monago, the Black Men's Exchange, and also attorney Shelby Emmett. I mean, well, what do you make of this? Because, again, Here we are. And in fact, there's a guy in Nigeria who's now trolling the United States saying, oh, y'all were dogging us when it came to Ebola. Now you have this outbreak of measles in your country. And a lot of this is because parents have bought into this whole idea. I don't want my kid vaccinated.
Well, you know, a lot of that is just political philosophy or family philosophy. But I want to share something very personal here. And we're talking about measles and not polio. But my mother had polio. My mother contracted polio when she was 12. And she would have done anything to have had a vaccine. And now there's a vaccine, and polio is all but eradicated in places around the world, most around the world. As a parent, I couldn't wait to get my child to get immunization because I saw what happens to people's lives when there's a preventable disease and we just let it happen for some sort of philosophy about my child and his purity and its vegan life. It's just not fair to the child itself. If this happens, it's not fair to the rest of us.
Cleo, Chevy, a lot of this also centered around autism, and parents are saying, oh, I think my kid got autism because they were vaccinated. But as the doctors laid out, you're talking about you're putting your child's health literally at risk.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that what helped you to understand polio was a personal experience. A lot of people, when it comes to measles in our community, don't see it because it's not promoted as something to be concerned about. So if it's something that's rarely discussed, they don't believe it. And then we have people think about the autism, but I think it's been proven that autism has that the treatment does not cause autism. And so that's been proven that that's the case, that it does not cause autism. But we need a campaign that has people's face on it. Mm-hmm. And we need testimonies like yours on this issue to get people to care about.
Shelby, then Doc.
Well, I would say, too, another big point that we're missing here is the aspect of public policy around illegal immigration. Now, you have to remember, in our country, most schools, in order to enter a public school, you need to be vaccinated. I would say to those parents that don't like vaccinations, homeschool your kid so you can protect everybody else. The problem is when you bring in these illegal children that you saw over the summer. I'm from Michigan. My mom's a teacher in Michigan. She has a few students right now. They have no records. We have no idea if these kids have been immunized or not. It takes a long process. So when we're talking about, you know, political correctness and open up our borders and love the world and all this, we have to remember that these kids are going to be in classrooms with your children and our children, and this is an issue. This isn't just American kids. This is illegal alien children as well in our public schools not being vaccinated.
Doc, any evidence of that?
Yes, absolutely. Because most of the time when I speak to those that are anti-vaccine, they will say, well, they're relying on the herd effect. The herd effect is out of 100 children in a group, 99 would have been vaccinated. So my child's not being vaccinated because I chose for that to not occur. So the herd effect, well, why should I? Because everyone else is vaccinated. But just like your other guest said, this is a total global area in the world, and we are now seeing measles coming in from countries that we still see measles. The other thing I wanted to address, Roland, the autism, that is now, that's false. It has no relationship to autism. I am also a geneticist, and it turns out that we know that autism is a spectrum, and we also know that when you receive the MMR, it's scheduled for 12 months old, and it's scheduled for 4 years old. Well, at 12 months, there are some milestones, developmental milestones, that one, the child begins to achieve, such as speaking. So, coincidentally, that child who was destined, who was normal up to 11 or 12 months, who had autism from birth, after he received the MMR, he or she received the MMR, they don't talk anymore. They regress. And that was where the relationship, the false relationship of MMR, measles, mumps, rubella, giving a child autism.
Doctor, but that all right. We're out of time. We surely appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Pediatrician Dr. Marilyn McPherson Quarter. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, folks, the Congressional Black Caucus, significant numbers now, largest caucus in the Democratic caucus. They also have lots of seniority, but they're upset because some House Dems want to get rid of seniority. We'll talk about that when we come back. Also, we talk to the author of the NAACP Image Award nominated book, Who We Be, that breaks down the difference between racism and culturalism. All of that coming up next on News One Now, right here on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Folks, Marlene Evers Williams is resigning her post as Distinguished Scholar in Residence at Alcorn State University in Mississippi. Evers Williams is stepping down in order to spend more time with the Metgar and Merle Evers Institute, a nonprofit devoted to promoting and preserving the history of the Civil Rights Movement. Evers Williams rose to prominence as a civil rights leader after her husband, civil rights activist Metgar Evers, field secretary for the NAACP in Mississippi, was assassinated by white supremacists 1963. All right, folks, there are more black members in the House of Representatives than ever before. Many have been in Congress for years and are now on track for top positions on several committees. However, some House Democrats want to change this notion of using seniority when it comes to committee assignments, which would diminish the power of a lot of top-ranking black lawmakers. We'll go to our panel right now. Joy, of course, Cleo, as well as Shelby. And the Daily Beast had a story on this. Tim Mack did the story talking about this here. And Congressman Emmanuel Cleveland of Kansas City, my frat brother, made a great statement. He said, black folks and Hispanic folks are waiting all this time, playing by the rules, all good. Now all of a sudden we get the position of power. Now folks again want to change the rules. And look, the reality is Congress typically has always been about seniority. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden they're saying, wait a minute. Now we get screwed because y'all want to change the rules, and they're pushing back hard.
You know what I find disappointing about this is that Nancy Pelosi and members of the caucus, Mr. Butterfield, all say, oh, we don't think this is malice against us. But one of the things Bill O'Reilly said after the 2000 election night, he said, I guess this is not a good place to be a white person anymore. And I think that it is everybody's fearful of the color majority that is coming on this country. It is coming whether you like it or not. And let's start to figure out how we look like apartheid South Africa, where you can be the majority number, but you have no power. And I'm disappointed in the Democrats to even entertain this.
Well, supposedly this has nothing to do with race. And there's white people who are also concerned, who are Democrats, about losing seniority. And that this just happens to have a racial mix to it because of coincidence.
The black people and the Latino people.
Keep in mind, when the Republicans took over, they also changed their rules as well. Well, they lessen the importance of seniority. But I do believe, though, that Black Caucus members have a point, because the reality is, even when you're in the minority, when you're the ranking member on a committee, I mean, that holds significant power. Having Maxine Waters as the ranking member on the House committee dealing with banking and finance, I mean, that's crucial. That's not just you're in a minority, it's no big deal.
I have to disagree with you guys on this. I'm sorry. I worked up there. I'll tell you. Number one, I hate to break it to the CBC and members of Congress, but it's not about you. It's not about your power. This is about you representing your district, not about you having seniority. This is the problem with Congress. Everyone's concerned about titles, having a nice office, what curtains they're going to have, what pictures they get in their hung office. They're not concerned about policy or the people they represent.
Now, I think that is so unfair.
Now, for the CBC,
it's so unfair.
The CBC has not had any power in that Congress in years, and the CBC doesn't want any power. The CBC does whatever the Democratic majority wants. They never speak out against anything that's harmful. They never go against any of the policies that may be harmful to African Americans, like on school choice issues.
I'm sorry. First of all, the CBC is irrelevant.
They are.
That's nonsensical. When you get the House Financial Services Reform Bill, it was the CBC that withheld their votes from the House Banking Committee, and they caused Barney Frank to go get the votes elsewhere. I'm not done yet. The CBC, by withholding their votes, made sure that $4 billion was added to that to deal specifically when it comes to minorities being included when it comes to banking policy. So for you to say that that's irrelevant, trust me, when President Obama in the White House, and the reason I know, because I got the phone call at 10 o'clock
well,
at night.
Let me educate you.
I'm the one who got the phone
call.
I'm the one who got the phone call at 10 o'clock at night from the White House saying, hey, you can be discussing this on the show Sunday and on Tom Jones tomorrow, because they were concerned about the same power of the CBC.
The same White House that didn't meet with any Democratic members for about a year and a half.
How is that irrelevant?
And the CBC members have been complaining for a long while.
How is that irrelevant?
Barack Obama ignoring it.
So Black caucus don't do nothing but buy curtains?
I'm saying the Congressional Black Caucus is nothing but rubber stamp whatever the Democratic majority wants. They don't have an independent voice. They don't speak for any
Absolutely untrue. And you're not the only person on this panel who worked over there. I used to be a senior producer at C-SPAN who covered all of this.
But this absolutely irrelevant. Power. We're talking about the CBC.
No, I understand. I understand this box you got caught into. It's not about their power. This is a really good, sort of talking point you might have got on the phone this morning. But I'm just trying to say, what I'm trying to say is each and every member of that caucus represents a constituency that they have stood up four. They're
oh,
not
really?
Just, yes, okay. Absolutely. If you look at the impact that
I don't think Baltimore, John Conyers out of Detroit has done a very good job representing the people of that area
well,
for
Maxine
the 30
Waters,
but Maxine Waters has done
Waters
an outstanding
done
job.
Outstanding
you know what? Let's bring it home. I don't know. I don't know what Chris Van Hollen does for the district I live in Maryland. So it's not the Congressional Black Caucus. I think he might
no,
be doing
I'm
a good job.
You
but no, no, let me finish.
Terms of power
let me finish.
Congressman,
you accuse them of being ineffective.
Members of Congress shouldn't have power.
But
what's the timeout? Hold on. Are there not Republican committee members, Democratic committee members, are there not individuals who are also over those committees? And so
and that's
that
the problem with Congress, you guys.
That is
it's
how
not
it's
about
that. It's called
the
Constitution.
It's supposed
it's
to be about the constituents.
Well, why is it become a problem now that black folks and their
there.
Power is at risk?
Right.
There's
because
no
these white Republicans have had all this power and nobody had no issue.
In a room and we're saying, okay, we're all black members that are involved in gerrymandering.
This is called you getting the side up.
I'm
like, okay. No, you get the side
up.
I mean, but to act as if somehow, but to act as if somehow by being somebody who can greatly influence the policy,
but
the public policy.
No.
Wow.
They do whatever Pelosi says.
Okay.
They just say yes,
ma'am.
Yes,
ma'am. That's not true.
So, that is.
But isn't Pelosi like in trouble now?
Yeah, with them.
With them. Yeah.
Oh wait. Hold on. So not now is Planned Parenthood.
Well,
and his abortion.
What in the world are you talking about?
What in the world are you talking about?
They don't have any individual voice. They always just do whatever the other side says. I mean, I've never heard them.
If you live in the district where Elijah Cummings represents in Baltimore,
I can tell you
about the houses that have been saved because he has come to the rescue
of his district. I can tell you about Elijah Cummings ensuring that $300 million was put in the congressional budget to assist minority entrepreneurs when they come to get bonding and contracts. Please tell me which white member of Congress or even Republican member of Congress or even a Democrat member of Congress actually was concerned about the bonding of black and Hispanic-owned businesses. Please respond.
Well, the Republican Study Committee did a huge thing in 2010 and 2012.
I am speaking specifically when it comes to the problem of black and Hispanic construction companies being unable to get bonding.
Well, you're talking like the Davis-Bacon Act that just actually brought down wages for African-Americans, made it harder for us.
Shelby. See, here's the deal, Shelby. This is a game you can't play on this show. Switch. When you say they have not done anything, and I am specifically referencing what they have done, when I can talk to Congress. One second. When I can say specifically at Congressman Shaka Fatah, when it came to $1.1 billion being placed in the budget when it comes to housing, Black Member of Congress from Philadelphia, please tell me that didn't exist.
And how's Philadelphia doing right now, everybody? Come on.
Wow, that's your best response?
Please.
Okay,
my point is
gotcha.
These people are not supposed
all right.
to be there.
Okay, you must have
something.
A Super Bowl hangover right now because to
a
sit here when I give you
no.
When you say personally insulted, but when you personally insult members of the Black Caucus, I gave you specific facts and you can't even respond.
Well, being a
you said they've done nothing. But when you bring 5-year-old talking points, then you get rejected because I gave you specifics.
And I
what they've done.
I said
no, you didn't. You said your response was, what does Philadelphia look like right now?
I said the Davis Beacon Act, that's a certain law, has hurt people.
I hope we have 10 more
seconds.
All right. I think that to sit on this show and to blanketly disrespect or dishonor the work of 46 people is a 5-year-old talking point. Because each and every one of those people are probably more accountable to their constituency than the other 400 members of the House of Representatives because of the way black people deal with you. They walk up to your house and say, hey, my street's not clean.
All right.
Okay.
Back in Detroit.
All right. Joy, Cleo. Shelby.
Their water.
Gotcha. All right, please. Go Google something. Author Jeff Chang joins us to talk about how cultural acceptance and the racial divides coexist. He is here with his NAACP Image Award nominated book, Who We Be, The Colorization of America. And also, folks, we'll talk about this shockwave workout to get you healthy. All that more right here on News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Oh, I gotta tell you, like the Kimba and the Mutombo, no, not on this show. All right, folks, buzzwords like post-racial and multicultural get thrown around a lot these days. What do they really mean? Are we any closer to tackling racism? than we were before these words were invented? Well, Jeff Chang tries to answer these questions in his new NAACP Image Award nominated book, Who We Be, The Colorization of America. He's also the executive director of the Institute for Diversity in the Arts at Stanford University. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
All right, so exactly define the colorization of America. How do you see it?
Well, I was talking about the changes that happened culturally that accompany the demographic shifts over the last half century. So before multiculturalism, before hip hop, pretty much the ideal was that you had one way of being American, you had to assimilate to that.
Was this notion of basically a white America.
A white America, right. And so if you're anybody else, you just have to assimilate into that. Colorization is talking about the process of breaking that open. Multiculturalism movement comes along in the 70s and the 80s, and then hip hop comes along and has changed, I think, in a lot of ways, the way that we see each other.
And not only that, you also have an increase in interracial marriage in this country as well. Mm-hmm. People more identifying as biracial. But the reality is you still have these racial components, if you will, of America.
Right.
Who's white, who's Asian, who's black, who's Latino.
Right. And what's really interesting about this is that even as we've seen the images desegregating, right, on our TVs and the media, in our pop culture and our music, all that kind of stuff, what we see is a resegregation happening in the U.S. And I think that that's the thing that we need to get to at this particular point. We need to get back to a consensus around racial justice issues, around fighting resegregation, around fighting for equality.
Well, this also, to me, also still deals with power.
That's right.
Because I fundamentally believe that I remember when President Obama was elected, that was a study that dealt with, how do you feel about the future of America for your children?
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
only group mm-hmm. that did not have a positive view of the future for their children were white Americans.
And it's still the same way right now. And there's this divide, right? After Ferguson, there's a divide in the way that we even see the issues. So on the one hand, race has become the number two issue in the US, right? By all the polls, right behind the economy. But by the same token,
But the economist also deals with race. But
well,
go ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. We can go into that, too. But the point is that in a large way, that's driven, I think, a lot by people of color, by communities of color. A large plurality of white folks don't think that there's an issue that we need to address. And I think that that's what we need to build a push to at this particular point. But what I'm arguing is that cultural change always precedes political change. So we've got to seed within the culture these images, these narratives, these stories that will allow us to get to the next stage.
But I think part of the problem, though, is I go back to who is the person in control telling the story.
Right.
So therefore, when you watch television, and I've always said this here,
yeah,
and I've always said that if you want to see the power of media in any other world when there's a coup, they get control of the guns first.
And the
media second.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe today what you have when it comes to movies, when it comes to television, when it comes to broadcast media, when it comes to online as well, you have, in many ways, white still being in control of the narrative and being unwilling to let go of that power mm-hmm. because it's like, well, this is the last bastion, because if we let go of this,
yeah.
Oh, man, it's a wrap.
And these are the debates that we're having, right, around the Oscars, around the Grammys. All of this stuff comes back year after year. I was just talking with Justin Simien, the director of Dear White People, and Spike Lee on Friday at Stanford. And you know, Spike is almost bored of the question now because he's been through it. He's seen what's happened. He reminded us that Driving Miss Daisy was the movie that won in 1989, not Do the Right Thing. But what I'm trying to say is these are the artists, these are the culture folks, these are the people that are offering visions for where we need to go. And so Justin made the point. What movie do we remember now?
Right.
We remember Do the Right Thing.
But see, what's crazy, though, is I think, and this is what you have, when you mentioned right. the Academy, you had, look, more than 60 years old, you know, largely right. white, right. largely right. male. Same thing in media.
Same thing in the electorate as well.
Right. Right? I believe you have this post-civil rights movement generation. I was born November 1968. Then, okay. of course, you have Gen X, you have Gen Y, you have millennials. That are more accepting of this different narrative, but you still have, I still believe, older white Americans holding on to this, like, look, this it. I mean, we gotta have some for our kids, mm-hmm. but the next generation is saying, wait a minute, we see as a different world here.
But it's also difficult and it's complicated as well, right? MTV did a poll where they looked at millennials' attitudes around race, and about 80% of them said, we want to see a colorblind society. right? And 80% of them said, we want to see people respected for the difference. These are opposing positions.
Right.
These are completely opposing positions. In the culture wars, there are opposing positions. There's still opposing positions. There's no third way yet. And so what I'm arguing in the book a lot is that artists are the ones who are helping us to see where that goes.
Folks, the book is Who We Be, The Colorization of America, nominated for an NAACP Image Award. Jeff Chang. Jeff, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. See, that wasn't too bad.
Nah.
All right. Coming up, fitness trainer Mocha Lee joins us for Fit Live Win. We'll talk about the latest exercise craze, the Shockwave workout, and we break down who could and should take home a Grammy this weekend. And we talk with a Grammy nominee, Antonique Smith. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at News One or at Roland S. Martin, or go to our News One Facebook page, 27 before top of the hour. News One Now on TV One.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hey, everybody. I'm Ty Tribbett, and you're watching News One Now with my man, Roland Martin, right here on TV One.
All right, folks. Fit Live Win Monday, trying to get you healthy and well. And you know folks out there trying to get themselves straight. So there's a new exercise routine because you didn't like the last 8,471 we gave you. So it's called the Shockwave Exercise Routine. It's now being called the most efficient total body workout in the world. Okay, the Extreme Circuit Challenge is especially designed to target and chisel the legs, core, and arms. All right, fitness professional Mocha Lee is here to tell us more about the Shockwave. All right. So yes. What is this Shockwave?
So the Shockwave.
What's the big deal?
The big deal is that you get so much work done in a short amount of time.
Okay. Define a short amount of time.
Okay. So Friday, we did an 18-minute workout. So 18 minutes to me is, you know, you're in and you're out.
Now, is that the max number?
That's
or
not
or
the
do
max.
They vary?
It varies. But most of my clients, really, that's their main issue, is that I just don't have a lot of time
right.
for a workout.
So what happened in this 18 minutes?
Okay, within this 18 minutes, most people are familiar with circuit training, different stations
right.
set up. One station, you might be doing arm work. One station,
right.
you're doing your legs. But the key to this Shockwave is that there's a row machine that's really the center of the workout. And for those who've known me over the years, I love rowing because it's arms and legs and core.
Okay.
So the people who are on the row machine.
All right, so here's the video.
So here's the video. These people are at the core station doing the ball.
Okay,
you see the row machine?
Okay, so do me a favor. Okay, roll the video back.
Oh.
Re-rack it.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Re-rack the video. Then
let's
I need y'all to hit pause. All right? Now, re-rack it. Hit play. Hit play. Stop.
Uh-huh.
Stop.
Right.
Okay, I say stop. I mean pause it. I need to
pause.
Still see the video, y'all. So please, pull the video back up.
And
hit pause so I can see what they're doing. So an exercise, say right here. Okay, here we go.
Okay, so that's a core station.
Okay,
you
so
have a medicine ball.
They're doing sit-ups
mm-hmm.
with the fitness ball.
Right. That's one station.
Okay, like how,
four.
Like, okay, is it number of reps or is it time?
Well, it's time and it's based on the people who are rowing. So if you're on the row machine and the coach says, go 500 meters, you push the button and you're rowing. You're trying to get that 500 meters over with.
So while it's happening, so somebody's on a row machine.
Yes.
And you're another station.
Yes.
But y'all are going the same length.
Well, yes, because I can't finish my sit-ups until those rowers are finished.
That's my point.
Okay. And that's why it becomes fun, because then it's sort of like this camaraderie, trash-talking scenario where you're like, come on, hurry up, finish. We're trying to get this over with.
Hell,
and then it becomes, you're good at that.
All right.
But it's very interactive, and that's why it becomes fun. And that's what all of us trainers are just trying to figure out. How can we make the workout fun?
Okay, hit
so
play.
So people do it.
Hit play. All right.
We'll
so here we go. So they're doing that.
They're doing the abs.
All right, freeze.
Okay.
Freeze.
They're
freeze.
The folks. The folks are doing the legs.
Can y'all hit pause? Lord, follow my directions. All right. So we got one crew rowing.
Yeah.
The other folks, if you see the left corner, they're
doing
lunges.
Some legs, yes. Because each station, they're doing some lunges. They're variations now because you don't have to be super fit to come into these classes. If you don't want to do those jumping lunges, which is what they were doing, you just do regular old lunges. But what happens is people kind of get caught up in the whole, energy of it. And then they want to do the intense version.
So how many different exercises are going on? So we saw the ab sit-ups with the fitness ball.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the rowing. We saw the lunges. What else is going on at the same time?
So it depends on the instructor and how they want to set up the class and how many people come to the class.
Okay.
But you'll probably have, at a minimum, with the rowers, four different stations.
Okay.
You know what
so
I mean?
What
you'll
was
have
the, what
arms.
Was the one
so we just saw one where they have ab station doing the
right,
sit-up,
right.
the lunges for legs,
that's two.
then I don't think they got around to showing the arms.
No,
so probably somebody was doing like some bicep curls to a shoulder press to work the arms.
With dumbbells.
Yeah, with dumbbells. Okay. All right. So you have a lot of equipment you can use. It just makes it, you know, you have variety.
Okay, so now this is a group thing. So what do you do by yourself?
Well, I mean, you can always set up stations by yourself. If you're the type of person who enjoys just working out on your own, you just set up stations and do your own thing.
Okay, so let's say this shockwave thing is really that's really a group exercise.
Yeah, and it's kind of geared. It's kind of most of your viewers have probably heard of CrossFit.
Right.
It's that mentality where when you're in a group, you're going to work harder and just get more excited about the workout.
All right. So that's the group things. But let's say you're individual.
Yes.
All right. So let's say. All right, so if your individual thing, mm-hmm. so and let's say you don't have a rowing machine.
Okay.
Right? So how what are you setting up? Because it's the same. What is it? Hit, high impact.
Hit. Yes.
Intensity training.
Is the same
so basically,
type thing.
What you're doing is you're doing quick bursts of an exercise, uh-huh. a short rest.
Yes.
Back to an exercise to keep your heart rate elevated yep. versus going higher than low.
Yep. You're constantly moving, challenging your body. That's why they call it shockwave because it shocks your system.
All right. So if I'm at home, mm-hmm. so if somebody's at home and they're watching us right now.
Yes.
And they want to do this. So give them four different stations,
exercises.
If you will.
Okay.
So let's say they got a fitness ball or they don't have one, but you know what? You need to get one.
Yes.
So go.
Even if you don't have a fitness ball, here are some circuits. If you're at home right now watching,
so
and you want to start.
Rewind back to that, because I want to show that when a woman got up on the ball.
Oh yeah.
Right.
She was holding.
Play.
She was holding a plank on the ball.
Right. So you're holding a plank. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So what happens? She's finished her set, and so now she's gonna hold that plank and yell
Stop.
At the people and tell
Stop.
Them to hurry up. And
all right. So let's show you at home.
Right.
I want to do four exercises. What can I do?
Okay. So let's say, for example, you want one of the stations to be cardio. So if you don't have any machines in your house, just get ready to do some jumping jacks. I don't want to say burpees because I know how you feel about burpees.
Oh my God.
But let's just say marching in place, jumping jacks.
I hate burpees more. I hate people who come on the show who don't have any facts who don't Google. But go ahead.
How about jump rope? Jump rope. That's
okay.
that's something you can do simple.
Even if you don't have a jump rope, you can simulate a jump rope.
Exactly. Just
okay.
hop.
So
okay,
you got
a cardio
jump
station.
Rope, that's cardio.
All right. Next, I would suggest go to something legs. Don't go right away to the floor and put your heart below down low because that might be a bit much for
okay.
you. You might lose your breath. So after a cardio station, go to legs. So do some squats.
Okay. So
you can handle
all
squats.
Right, cool.
All right. After squats.
Same jumping like it's hot. Same thing.
yeah, that move. So that after the squats, go ahead and do some arm stuff. Probably like a shoulder press if you have dumbbells. If you don't
okay.
have dumbbells in your home, push-ups. Push-ups are just the best traditional way to get your chest and triceps tight.
Okay.
So push-ups. And then your last station can be core. So for your core or your abs, you could do I want to call it a crisscross. Some people know it as a bicycle,
mm-hmm.
where you're laying on your back and you're kind of taking your
right.
shoulder towards, so
right.
twisting. And then that's four stations. And, you know, spend 30 seconds at each station, a minute, whatever you can handle. But just do something, because something is better than nothing when it comes to exercise.
All right. Well, I can first reach out to you.
Yeah. Oh, reach me on social media, Mocha Lee on Facebook. I'm The Real Mocha Lee on Twitter and Instagram. Would love to hear from you and answer your fitness questions.
All right, Shockwave, we got it.
Shockwave.
Yeah, I got it.
It's real.
All right, folks, coming up, I'm joined by music executives Dave Dickinson and Greg Baker, along with R&B singer Antoinette Smith, to preview the Grammy Awards. And she's a Grammy Award nominee. Hey, Antoinette, how you doing?
Hey.
How you doing? 16 before top of the hour. News 1 Now, TV 1.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, birthday shout-out time. Yesterday, comedian actor Garrett Morris, you know, Saturday Night Live, 78 years old. He's going to be a part of the SNL 40th anniversary taking place in a couple of weeks. Eddie Murphy will be on that as well. First time back on SNL in 30 years. Of course, y'all heard that first right here on TV 1, because that's how we do, because here, we know how to Google. All right. In 1988, James Weldon Johnson, composer of Lift Every Voice and Sing, is commemorated on a U.S. postage stamp. In 1990, a 30-year ban on the African National Congress is lifted by then-South African President de Klerk. And in 2009, Eric Holder is sworn in as the first Black Attorney General of the United States. Folks, this is big awards weekend on Friday, of course, the 46th annual NAACP Image Awards airing right here on TV One. I will be in L.A. for that. But on Sunday in L.A., 57th annual Grammy Awards. And so a big weekend. Some of your favorite musicians, singers, and producers are up for the various coveted prizes. And of course, which artists will take home the biggies? In the studio, I have Dave Dickerson, senior programmer here at XM Radio, Greg Baker, CEO of Blackbird Music and Film, and joining me via Skype from L.A., 2015 Grammy Award nominee, R&B singer Antoinette Smith. What's happening, girl?
Hey.
All right, then. So, folks, let's get right to it. Who do you think is going to be big this week? Because, first of all, the Grammys is not just about who wins. It's also these weird pairings they do. It's always quite interesting. Sometimes I'm going, who was on meth when they put this group together? That's also a big part of it, who's actually going to be singing. Any ideas who's going to be doing it this year?
Well, I think Sam Smith is going to roll with a lot of awards this year.
Which I'm still trying to figure out why, because literally all his songs sound the same.
Sound like
that. I mean, I swear it's the exact same song.
He ended the year really hot. He ended the year on a roll. He worked with Mary J. Blige and did his own thing, so he's on fire right now.
No, Tom Petty's on fire because he got to share some of the royalties from that song with Tom Petty. Anthony, is there anybody particularly you're looking to see at the Grammys this weekend?
Man, everybody, I'm so excited. I'm just so excited, first of all. And my bro, Rodney Jerkins, produced the Sam Smith song, Stay With Me. So I'm hoping he wins for that one.
Now, who's performing this week? I mean, remember, what was it, last year was Jay-Z, Beyonce, and The Chair. Anybody interesting this year we know about?
I don't know of anybody right now, Greg.
No.
So nobody leaked anything?
No, I think
Ariana Grande is performing.
Okay.
She really sang. I love her voice.
All right, then. So how do you see the big categories in terms of album of the year, song of the year? What is it looking
like? Well, I think that a lot of people think that Beyonce is going to win, but Beyonce's album came out really strong and then kind of fizzled out, where Sam, like, once again, ended the year really big. Pharrell also had a great year.
Yeah, he did. Same thing. I think it's Sam all the way through on most of the thing, even Song of the Year.
Well, what gets me is Vibe magazine had this cover. It said Sam Smith saving soul music. I'm like, okay, seriously, y'all might want to really calm down on that one. Yeah. I mean, just a couple of songs that weren't that soulful. I mean, I've heard soul.
You are a mess.
That ain't really in the soul category. Kendrick Lamar, how do you think he's going to do?
I think Kendrick Lamar is going to do good, but also look at Lecrae.
Yeah, I'm excited about Lecrae. You know, it's a gospel rapper to be in that category this time. He did wonderful numbers this year, and I think he'll you know, he's helping to change the face of it.
Now, Anthony, you perform at the Grammy nominations party, right? Y'all had some big thing there.
Yeah, the BET Music Matters show on Friday.
Mm-hmm. So you got a busy week.
I do, actually. This morning is crazy. I'm up. I'm with you. I'm so happy to be with you. And then I'm doing KTLA and have a smiley after this. So.
Now, what do you do for the rest of the week? Because, being nominated, I mean, it's sort of like bail at the ball. So you get to get all the attention and everything else.
You know what? I'm so honored and just grateful. I'm doing a show with Kelly Price. We're doing a tribute to Whitney Houston, my hometown hero, on Wednesday. There's, you know, the Essence Women in Music. And I'm just, man, it's a crazy week, but this is what I've been dreaming of since I was a little girl. So I just feel so honored and grateful.
All right. Well, certainly, because, you know, you won the show last year when your song dropped and got nominated. So certainly, congratulations with that.
Thank you so much. And you know what? I would say thank you because, you know, you were part of supporting me early, and I'm grateful. And Dave, too. Dave on here has been playing my song on Heart and Soul. So thank you both.
All right. So you win that Grammy. We want shout outs. We want shout outs.
The list is so long. Sway, actually, at Sirius XM said the same thing. He said he going to pan and he going to, like, go hard on me on the radio if I don't say something at the Grammys to him. So I'm scared.
So any other surprises? Anything else is going to jump out? That folks should be looking out for.
I hope Antoinette does get her shot. I mean, she deserves it. She's been working hard at it. She's been on the grind. Mm-hmm. And the Hold Up, Wait a Minute is such a good song.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Wait a minute. We had Liberation Aggression.
We had Gerald Albright, got his eighth Grammy nomination, so hopefully Gerald will take one as well. So looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. So hold tight 1 second. We come back. I got to do some movie headlines, but I'll break it down when we come back right here on News One Now TV.
Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, Bobby Christina Brown is clinging to life this morning after being found in a bathtub at her Georgia home over the weekend. The 21-year-old daughter of late superstar Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown was found by her husband, Nick Gordon, face down in the bathtub early Saturday in a situation eerily similar to the way her mother, Whitney Houston, was found dead nearly 3 years ago on Grammy weekend in an L.A. hotel. Sources close to the family say Bobby Christina has diminished brain function, and doctors have told the family it does not look good. Bobby Brown issued a statement asking for privacy and prayers for his daughter. Anthony, that certainly is a sad story. So many people obviously just worship and looked up to Whitney Houston, and it is certainly being very difficult for her daughter in the 3 years since her death.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, and you can see the whole 3 years that it was difficult for her. I was hoping that she would heal from it and just get better, but you could tell that it was taking a toll on her for sure.
Gents?
Yeah. It's a rough life when you're living your life in under the cameras and under the spotlight. I mean, so I really feel for her.
Yeah, with the, you know, the movie just came out. Now it's the anniversary again. It's a lot for a young child. Really, she's a child.
Yeah, 21.
To take on, you know.
Folks, another story here. A judge agrees with the jury and rules that AEG is not responsible for the death of Michael Jackson. In 2010, Michael's mother, Katherine Jackson, and her three grandchildren sued AEG Live because they felt the company was negligent in hiring Dr. Conrad Murray to treat Michael. AEG says they never told Murray how to treat the King of Pop. In 2009, Michael died from a fatal dose of propofol while in Dr. Murray's care. Murray was ultimately convicted of involuntary manslaughter. A statement from the attorneys, the California Court of Appeal agreed with what a unanimous jury found. AEG was in no way responsible for the tragic death of Michael Jackson. It seems as if, Anthony, this story cannot go away. It's like Michael Jackson has been dead since 2009, but it's like he's still here with the legal action and all the drama still around his estate.
You know, it's still unbelievable that he passed. And, you know, he was just the best. And we will always miss Michael. And I don't know if there's anything that could help the situation. Even if AEG was found guilty, it's still like Michael's gone. So yeah. It's really sad.
Now, while all y'all are coming on this here, rap mogul Jay-Z is trying to buy a Spotify competitor, a Swedish music streaming company called Spiro. The price tag, $56 million. Not bad. If you're a guy who was just a rapper, huh?
Not at all.
He's a mogul now. I mean, you know, the agencies and all that stuff that he runs. I mean, he's a great business
boxer. He has to do something with all that money.
So Anthony, Jay-Z trying to buy a streaming service. What you trying to buy?
What am I trying to buy? That's funny. I don't know what I'm trying to buy.
She's like, look.
You're trying to get
that one Grammy, huh?
Exactly.
No, that's right.
All right,
good luck,
then. I certainly appreciate it, folks. Thanks a lot, Anthony. Good luck. I'll see
you
in L.A. this week.
Much.
Good luck with the Grammys this weekend. All right.
Thank you.
I'll chat with you later. Folks, tomorrow on News One Now, tune in to see what people are talking about. One of the stories we'll be dealing with, of course, what's happening on Capitol Hill. And then maybe we'll see what CBC does. Shelby, watch the show. No need to Google. Just watch News One Now. Holla!
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.